Welcome to Grappling with the Gray, a forum for promoting an ethical mindset and ethical decision-making to help us more clearly see both sides of complex issues and better navigate the moral challenges of everyday life. I'm Rabbi Yonason Goldson, and I would like to invite and welcome my guests for today. With me is Jennifer Elder, who's a CPA and certified speaking professional who helps leaders future-proof their businesses by making smart decisions and staying ethical. Scott Mason, also known as the Myth Slayer, is a speaker, podcast host, and coach working with executives and entrepreneurs to magnetize and monetize professional freedom by dislodging toxic myths to ignite the charisma within. And Lisa K. McDonald is the founder of Career Polish, an executive career coach and master mindset coach who helps successful professionals reach their next phase of career happy and life healthy. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you, Rabbi, for having us.
It's a privilege to be here.
Always a pleasure.
And mine as well. And here is our ethics challenge for today. In the movie Passengers, a computer malfunction wakes up Chris Pratt out of hibernation too early, 90 years before his spaceship is going to reach its destination. He now faces the prospect of spending the rest of his life alone with no one for company except the robot bartender. Within a year, he has grown so depressed that he comes close to committing suicide. After pulling back from the brink, he's walking among the hibernating passengers when he spots Jennifer Lawrence asleep in her pod. He looks her up online and discovers that she's a talented writer. He reads her books, listens to her interviews, and falls in love with her. He becomes obsessed with the idea of waking her up so he'll have someone for company to save his sanity. He tells himself that it's wrong, but he can't keep the idea from coming back to him again and again. Would he be wrong to wake her up, causing her to lose her future in order to save him from madness and possibly death? If he did, would he be obligated to tell her the truth? Or would it be better to allow her to think that they're both victims of a system failure? In general, is it ever acceptable to impose hardship on some to prevent disproportionate hardship on others, like stealing from the grocery store to feed starving children? If so, how do we calculate when we're crossing the line? The floor is open. No one's jumping.
Okay, well, I'll jump in. So there's a couple of questions that was introduced. So as far as this, the movie scenario, is it wrong for him to wake her up? Absolutely. 100% in my opinion, because it's a selfish motivation. It's to keep his sanity. It's for his benefit and her detriment. That is a completely different scenario than, is it okay to steal from a grocery store, harming the owner of profit or what have you, to feed starving children? That's a little bit more of a, I think, more of an ethical dilemma in terms of stealing is wrong. However, it's a greater good. So I think those are completely different situations. And for me, it's an intrinsic value. You know, are you helping more people by doing something that's perceived as wrong, or is it a selfish motivation? It's kind of how I look at it.
So if it would be stealing food for me because I'm starving, that would be different from stealing food for my children?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to agree with Lisa here that there's a little bit of a balancing going on. Is if you are stealing food to feed several other people, there is some, you know, I'm hurting one person to save three others. So there's a little tipping of the scales there. Now, I know the one person you're stealing from would not think that, but, and there is that intrinsic benefit of I'm not doing this for myself. I'm trying to do it for somebody else. But in this scenario, I'm inclined to say, yeah, this is, I want to harm somebody else to help me. There's no greater good in here. Scott, what are your thoughts?
I'm actually going to disagree.
Oh, what a relief.
And I'm going to say that like all of the great ethical scenarios that you have raised on this show, Rabbi, This one actually implicates, in my eyes, something so profound, I don't know if we can truly face it. And that is to the extent to which any of us have the right to call control over our consciousness. Because you think about it, what he's doing is he's allowing her or giving her the gift or the punishment of consciousness. And yes, it is for his own benefit, but think about this more metaphysically. And if you're religious, think about this even from a more cosmic or a religious perspective. Why were human beings created? Why were we given a consciousness? It was so, in many traditions, a divinity could get some pleasure, some need of that divinity's met. We don't question the morality of that. Now, one could say he isn't God in this movie, but perhaps the ethical question isn't that different. None of us have control over when we're given consciousness. None of us do. And so from her perspective, she has no more or less control than anyone in the entire history of humanity. Are we really going to say that giving someone the gift of consciousness, just because it's a timing that they might like, is a de facto immoral act? I don't know if we'd want to push it that far.
That's a really fascinating approach, and I'm going to resist the urge to take this in a theological direction. But you know, I don't see the comparison completely, because she contracted to have her consciousness suspended for a particular period of time. And now he is inserting himself to violate the terms of the contract that she made with someone else. So I'm not sure I see that. It is a fascinating comparison, one I never would have thought of. And I can have another episode on that.
Now, there's also another way to think about this, a possibility that, okay, there was a computer malfunction that brought him back from stasis. What's to say that there won't be another computer malfunction? And does he need somebody else there to keep an eye on things?
That would be a different motivation. But his initial motivation was to keep my sanity, and I have somebody to keep me company as I die on this ship before we reach our final destination. If it was, there's been a malfunction, this, which I believe it happens later in the movie, that there is more malfunctions and the entire 5,000 are in jeopardy. That's now becomes a different situation. So if, and I agree with you, Jennifer, if it was a matter of, you know, there's problems going on with the ship, I can't do this alone. Okay, I could see. I need to wake up people who can help me, and maybe wake up, I don't know, the engineer and the mechanics instead of the writer in that situation. But again, I want to go back to the motive, which I think is really the root of everything. What is the motive in the actions? And that's where I think that, for me, that's where the crux lies.
Well, note if we look at the matter of degree here, I mean, he was, the way it's portrayed in the movie, he was really on the brink of suicide. And so this is an act to perhaps save his own life. In a situation where someone's life is at stake, I think you can make ethical accommodations to do things that would not be permitted in other situations. Does that figure in here?
I would say yes. In fact, that's exactly what I was thinking about before you made this very, very interesting point. If you're on such a trip, you're presumably on that trip for a larger purpose. And if you end up dying, for all we know, that purpose could cause a critical failure. Or if you end up not being able to fulfill whatever function that you might be able to fulfill if you were able to stay alive, who are we as outsiders to sit and say that someone else should end up committing suicide rather than working to save their own lives. I think that that has a little bit of moral hubris on our end, at least insofar as we are making black and white judgments based on a motive that we somehow view morally impure without understanding and fully embracing what drives someone to an extreme act like suicide.
And I think certainly in the context of the movie, it's that he wrestles with this decision. It goes on for some time that he is fighting with himself. He knows it's wrong. He actually makes up his mind not to do it. And in the end, he just finds the loneliness so unbearable and so crushingly depressing that he just, you know, abandons his efforts to hold himself back. It's portrayed in a way that's very sympathetic, but at the same time, she's probably not going to see it that way.
But we don't know. We don't know. We don't know anything about her moral state. We're making assumptions about that even. What if she were to wake up and say, oh, you know, I get it. I'm not happy about this. This wasn't perfect, but I can live with this. Would we view his actions differently?
I think that's always a question when it comes to ethics, is do we view things differently based on outcome? There can be intent, and then there's outcome. And sometimes we can have the best of intent and have a bad outcome, or we could have the worst of intent and have a good outcome. And that's always the tricky part, is you don't know what the result will be until after the fact. And then we start to sit in judgment, knowing what happened, past tense, but not being in the situation and under the pressures. And I don't think any of us can understand the pressure that he might have been under. I just read an article the other day about the quietest room in the world. No sound. No one has ever been able to stay in it for longer than an hour. It's crushing, apparently. After reading that, I have no desire to try it.
Yeah.
But I think that's always tricky, is to think, you know, with ethical scenarios, there's always pressure. And it's really hard to understand what that feels like or how you might act when you're under that pressure.
Yeah, I remember once I was in a lecture, and the rabbi was talking. It was a matter of Jewish law, but it applies as secular relevance too. And if you have somebody who is clinically a kleptomaniac, and as they have an uncontrollable impulse to steal. So that person is really not culpable. They're not in control of their own actions. Now, you may have to take certain actions to protect the public from people like that. And one person in the class got very, very upset with this. He says, well, what about a sex maniac? And the rabbi said, what about it? What you're doing is you're using inflection in your voice to make it seem different. Well, ultimately, objectively, we're talking about a person who has no control over his actions. And so again, we may need to protect people, but we're not going to incarcerate him because he is culpable. If we do, it'll be for the protection of others. So under extreme emotional situation, there is a recognition that sometimes we simply can't make the right choices. Gets complicated in the gray areas when we're not quite sure whether we have control or not.
That's, I think you raise a really good point of what you had said earlier too, is that it began and he knew it was wrong and he fought against it, but over time. So this was, you know, again, with his mental state and deterioration. But then the second question you asked was, should he tell her? And I think that now goes, you know, that's another really interesting question too, because she, you know, if she's unaware, how does this impact her?
Yeah. You know, a much more pedestrian, well, maybe not pedestrian is not the right word, but a more accessible example would be, imagine that a husband cheats on his wife. And then he regrets it sincerely, profoundly, breaks it off, and wants to go back to having a relationship, a normal, healthy relationship with his wife. Should he tell his wife that he cheated on her? And this is not something that has a simple answer. There's a violation of trust. A full repentance really requires coming clean, but at the same time, by coming clean, he may damage the relationship irreparably.
And
so, yeah, go ahead, Scott.
And I would say perhaps even lead to her own, her having a fatal mental health crisis. Because if she's alone on the spaceship with no one that she can trust, she may end up wanting to kill herself. It's interesting. I've seen once moral decisions, ethical decisions compared to steps on a ladder. So let's say that due to the extenuating circumstances of him being alone on the spaceship, we might acknowledge that he stepped down the moral ladder when he made this decision, but he was still on the ladder somewhere. Then the question becomes, to what extent does what he do with regards to the issue that Lisa raised take him off the ladder together and beyond what one might call a moral event horizon? And I'm reminded of a great book that I read recently by a physicist, Donald Hoffman, I think is his name, called The Case Against Reality. And the argument of this book from a scientific perspective is that we, as human beings, and in fact, all species on this planet, cannot and do not perceive reality or truth. We perceive what evolution has encouraged us to perceive in order to survive. In other words, we perceive what encourages fitness, not reality. And the argument that is behind that is that sometimes truth is so dangerous that it could lead not only an individual, but an entire species to extinction. And so thinking about that and extrapolating that into the ethical realm, I must ask, is the commitment to truth, which by the way, I tend to stand firmly behind, really from an ethical perspective, all that it's cracked up to be, particularly if it puts survival at stake?
Well, there's always that right versus right dilemma when it comes to truth. And in particular, that situation that you just mentioned, Rabbi, is, am I honest and tell my wife that I cheated on her and harm her irreparably? Or do I keep my tongue and build back my relationship? Both are right answers for someone. And it's not an easy call. Or what do you do if you are the best friend and you catch the husband cheating? Do you tell the wife? Do you approach the husband? Do you keep your tongue because it's not your place? So there are different perspectives on what's the definition of right.
And that's really where ethics comes into play. You know, between right and right or wrong and wrong. It's setting priorities. You know, and that's why we call this grappling with the gray, because if it's clearly right or clearly wrong, then we don't need to be here discussing it. Lisa, any thoughts?
I've actually seen this play out where parents of a friend, she was very ill. She didn't think that she had much longer. She confessed to dalliance when early in their marriage, because she wanted to clear her conscience, and it destroyed him. And she recovered and they continued to stay married, but there was always that division. So she made herself feel better, but it really destroyed him.
Which goes back to your original point, Lisa. that the motivation was, I want to confess for me, not for the person I've harmed.
Right.
Right. I was thinking, Lisa, that just makes the point right up front, is that is the motivation to make myself better at the expense of somebody else, or is there a greater good perspective?
So in my mind, I kind of look at it, is it a motivation or is it a justification?
Mm-hmm. Well said.
There is the argument that ultimately, and I'm sure mine's a lot greater than mine, including one in particular in this room, would have a lot to say about this, that ultimately what is ethical is pro-social. And what we tend to define as unethical are things that destroy us. And that goes as to the extent that any individual set of relationships is the foundation of a society. The willingness to sacrifice that emotional stability and the nature of the relationship that is, that the trust of that relationship was built on due to an inner need, is so great that the social nature or that social fabric between those people, two people, is destroyed, would almost inherently argue to me that there is, that that situation would be unethical, the one you just described, Lisa, absent some larger social issue that were playing out in the background. But in the situation of the spaceship, there is a larger social issue playing out in the background. Because if she kills herself, for all we know, the important functionality that she had on that ship may have been lost along with him. So there is more complexity in the scenario that was provided at the top of the hour, in my eyes at least.
Well, something that often happens in these scenarios is that we end up having questions that we can't always get answers to. We don't know what happened. It's a fictional story. And that's part of the discussion, because there is so many variables that come into play that if you change one variable, you can come to really dramatically different conclusions. And also in the case of a movie, which is designed to play on our emotions and to make us sympathetic to the fellow who is in this situation, you know, what if I were stuck on a ship alone for a year with no one to talk to and no hope of ever having anyone to talk to? That puts a person in a certain frame of mind. So then would we say that we can understand and perhaps excuse him for doing the wrong thing? Or would we say that under extenuating circumstances, maybe it's not the wrong thing?
Again, I think that might come down to outcome. Let's think about, all of us are unethical probably monthly. The minute you get behind the wheel of your car, how many of us can say that we have not ever been speeding? We know it's not the right thing to do, and we slow down as soon as we see a certain car with certain colored lights on it, slam on those brakes, and it reminds us for a little while to do the right thing. But then we slowly speed up again because we need to get where we're going. I'm on a deadline. I left late. And in a lot of cases, you would say, that's not horrible. But what if they get in a car accident? What if a squirrel goes running across the road and they swerve? Now, we're probably going to have a different viewpoint. We may have some empathy as to why it happened, but I don't know that we would excuse the behavior. And that's a tough call. Is, you know, at what point in time do you say I have empathy and I understand? And at what point in time do we cross over and say I have empathy, I understand, and I forgive?
I think you made a great point, Jennifer, in that tipping point is the outcome. I think that plays a major factor in that our final decision.
Is that more of an emotional perspective, or is that an actual ethical perspective? I mean, if something is intrinsically wrong, should it matter what the outcome is? Or, you know, I mean, if a person is driving drunk and makes it home safely, does that make it okay? Didn't hurt anybody, didn't cause any damage. But I created a situation that endangers others. And the fact that I got away with it, I don't see how that validates the legitimacy of the choice to do it.
Well, yeah. Exactly. No, it will legitimize your belief that what you did was okay.
Which may make it worse, right? So yeah. I'll do it again.
Because of that, yes, there are brain chemicals involved that when you have that feeling of, phew, I got away with it, that's addicting. And so that's where people start getting into more and more bad behavior because they did get away with it.
In fact, a number of years ago, I think it was the coach of the St. Louis Cardinals was arrested for drunk driving. And it turned out, why was he pulled over? Because he was driving so slowly, because he knew he was drunk and he was overcompensating.
Wow.
So now you've got this sort of peculiar situation where he was trying to compensate for doing the wrong thing. And that's what got him caught for doing the wrong thing. Again, you can empathize. But I don't think you can really justify.
Well, and if we were to justify based on outcome, it could, even in the scenario that you originally posed, lead to all sorts of consequences that talk about grappling with the gray. We'd be grappling with the entire rainbow. If the circumstances that he were facing were to mitigate, or the outcome. Let's say he wakes this lady up and she's actually thrilled. She had secretly begun to dread right before she went into unconsciousness, going to this other planet. Now she's with someone that she falls in love with and they're starting to live happily ever after. And she's so glad that he did this. Well, sort of going to what Jennifer just said, then would that potentially be a justification or an empathy or a reason to excuse them, then in turn waking up more people, and then those people waking up more people, and where does it stop?
That's what makes ethics so interesting, is there is no easy answer. There are more questions than flat out answers. It's so rarely purely black and white. It's more of that 50 shades of gray.
I'm not sure that's the best.
But be that
best
as it may,
reference here.
I have to say, though, be that as it may, even though there may not be answers and the answers are tough, at some point a decision has to be made. It might be instantaneous, like when you choose to pull over once you realize you're drunk and you shouldn't be driving, or to continue driving, whether slowing down or speeding up. And at some point, he had to make a decision, because I would argue that not making a decision, just simply, again, potentially killing himself or living in misery and acting out in whatever way he might to because of his illness, could have led to a whole other host of dangers. And so then, knowing that life is full of ethical decisions, none of which may have a concrete answer, when do we say, I behaved in a way that is morally acceptable? So, and I'm pushing back very respectfully, Jennifer, against landing in that direction, because usually a decision has to be made, and holding up and saying, I'm going to be accountable as an ethical matter for the decision I made, is something that we all have to do, whether we're judged externally or not.
I really like that, Scott. You touched on something that I've spoken about often, but you got me to see it in a different way. That if I'm facing an ethical decision, an ethical choice, and I grapple with it over time, and I use all the resources available to me, and in the end, I have to make a decision. No decision is also a decision. I have to make a decision. So I make the best decision I can. And for whatever reason, by whatever metric, it turns out to be wrong. Have I acted unethically? If I did the best.
One of the questions I might ask is, do we give the character credit for having thought this through? That he did grapple with it. You said that he didn't think, he wasn't sure whether this was the right thing to do or not. And he did consider it versus, is it different if somebody just says, I'm going to be selfish, I'm going to wake her up? Is that a different decision then?
I think in the same way that intent, we said, makes a difference, as Lisa said right at the beginning, you know, if it's purely a selfish decision, then we have an easier time condemning that. If it's a more complex decision that one struggles with, then we have an easier time at least empathizing, if not excusing.
Yeah, because what you're pointing to is whether things like ethical rules really should exist at all. So ethical rules can be keeping you from grappling with the gray, and therefore may be enabling you in the right set of circumstances or the wrong set of circumstances to make decisions without that grappling, decisions that may have consequences or even may have been made or decided upon because of intent that was poorly thought out or not having anything to do with anything related to ethics, like politics, say.
Well, that's the difference between ethics and compliance.
Yeah.
And that's why I say that compliance is often the enemy of ethics, because once we legislate ethics, we've now abdicated the responsibility to grapple with our decisions. And when that happens, we're in trouble.
To that point, Rabbi, if you create a list of thou shalt nots, which is often what you see in corporate America, is they will have ethical policies and say, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. And then they encourage employees to look at their ethics statements. And then somebody looks and goes, well, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. But what I want to do is not listed. Therefore, it must be okay.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, and maybe we'll end with this. And again, without getting into too much theology, the sages teach that the second temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. The spiritual basis for why it was destroyed by the Romans was that the people were not following the spirit of the law. They were not violating the letter of the law, but they were corrupting, they were distorting the law to find loopholes to do what they wanted to do, which in some ways is worse than breaking the laws outright, because it corrupts society, it corrupts our thinking. And I thank you all for this conversation, because that's really why we're here, not necessarily to come to a clear answer, but to engage in the discussion of the different angles so that we can make ourselves more ethically sensitive. And when we find ourselves in difficult situations, have more tools to draw on to more consistently do the right thing. So thank you very much, Jennifer Elder, Lisa McDonald, Scott Mason. You did not disappoint in the quality and the engagement of the conversation. And thank you. For those of you who are watching or listening, if you would like to suggest a dilemma or a scenario for us to take up, please go to jonasandgoldson.com, use the contact information, submit your suggestion. If it's something fascinating, we will definitely take it up on a future episode. And please join us next time. Be wise and be ethical.